Well, we're just going to jump right in because I've got a few things to talk about today. As you well know, from last week when we've been looking at the history of Israel and the biblical history, the basis for what all is going on in the Middle East and things that are happening every single day over there, as you well know this week. From last week, if you'll turn to Genesis, that's where we'll be again today. Genesis 12. God blesses Abram and he says, I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. And he tells him that his covenant that God made with Abram, Abram didn't have a thing to do with it. He was sound asleep. It was totally from God. Dealt with a land that he was giving to Abraham's descendants. And this land was the place where the Canaanites lived at the time. And he said, your descendants will come to possess this land, and it will be an everlasting covenant. They will possess it forever. Well, Abram and Sarah got impatient, and Sarah gave Abraham her maidservant Hagar, and they had a child named Ishmael. And God said, and the angel of the Lord said, and he will be a wild donkey of a man. He will live in hostility with everyone around him, and he will live in hostility even amongst his brothers. So with each other. So he says, and this is how a hallmark of what a characteristic will be of Ishmael and his descendants. But he said, my covenant is going to be through Isaac. And he told Abram, he said, I promised you a son. You're going to have that son. You're going to call him Isaac. And my covenant is going to flow through Isaac and his offspring. Now, what was unusual about that in the Jewish culture? What was unusual about that? Normally, it was the oldest son. Always the oldest son would normally inherit all things from the father. In a lot of instances, same way with Jacob and Esau that we'll look at here later too, God says, no, I'm going to work with this line, not this line. Which tells me that God, again, is above all cultural and traditional influences and says, I'll tell you who I'm going to work with. And it's not going to be the oldest son in this case. I'm going to work with Isaac, and he and his descendants will inherit the land. And so he also said that Ishmael's going to be blessed too. I'm going to be doing things with Ishmael that he's going to be blessed with lands and tribes and rulers and the numerous descendants also. So he didn't leave Ishmael out, but his covenant was through Isaac. Now then, Kirkendall brought up an interesting point. He was talking about Hagar being the wife of Abraham. I looked it up in the Hebrew. It's the same word that is used for wife as Abraham's wife Sarah, as Hagar his wife. It's the same Hebrew word. And I looked at some of the commentaries, and what they were talking about was it is the matriarch of the family, the first wife, and that is Sarah, that is the primary wife. And so we see several of the patriarchs in the Old Testament who have several different wives, but always there is the primary wife, which was Sarah in Abraham's case. He had other wives, Hagar, and we'll see another one today, Keturah, that he had children by, but it was always the matriarch, Sarah, that is talked about. And if you look at how many times that comes up in the Old Testament and New Testament, it's always Sarah is who is talked about as Abraham's wife. The only other time Hagar is mentioned is over in Galatians, and where Paul is talking about the child of the slave woman who was born under law, and he says, but you are children of the free woman, talking about Sarah. So it is interesting to kind of find that out. Same Hebrew word for wife. So that was always ready to learn something else. Well, okay, so let's start out by letting you tell me what you heard happening over in this area of the world this week. Was there anything special that went on? Hamas. So what did Hamas do? Hamas took over Gaza Strip. Again, these organizations, these militant organizations, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Hezbollah, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, there's dozens of them. They are groups that are built around militancy and for a very specific purpose. And I'll show you what these purposes are. So Hamas came in. They were supposed to be forming a coalition government. In February of 06, The Palestinian people voted Hamas into power to run the Palestinian Liberation Organization, their government. Well, immediately, all the international support dwindled because Hamas is almost on every single country's list of known terrorist organizations. The United States led the way by saying, you know, we're not going to give you any money anymore. We're not going to support anything because you're a terrorist organization. And the rest of the world pretty much followed suit. So for the last year, they've been struggling with how to handle this and what to do with it. Yasser Arafat's old organization, Fatah, who Mahmoud Abbas is the prime minister, tried to form a coalition government just a couple months ago that would help establish this government and get it going. Well, we saw what happened. They started fighting with each other and killing each other and all of this. And finally, it came to a head this last week when Hamas went through the Gaza Strip and killed 11 or 12 Fatah members and ran the rest out and have taken control of the Gaza Strip. Just yesterday, Mahmoud Abbas dissolved the government, appointed a new president, and is trying to form another government that the international community will support. The United States is already saying, we're going to support the Fatah and Abbas. We're going to support them. Now then, it's sort of like taking the lesser of two evils or the evil of two lessers. You know, what do you do? But this making a point of not supporting Hamas for sure is what they're doing. And so there's several other countries that are kind of falling in. I don't know where this is headed, but this is enormous. I mean, and I feel sorry for the Palestinian people in Gaza. I don't see anything but starvation and poverty and getting, if it could get worse, it's going to get worse. And so this is pretty enormous. I don't know where it's going. Well, let me show you a little bit about Hamas. When Hamas came to power or began to form as a group in 1988, they came out with this charter, this covenant of the Islamic Resistance Movement, or Hamas. And in their preamble, I'm going to show you just a few excerpts out of this whole thing. It's a long covenant. I'm just going to show you some excerpts. They start off this covenant with this little preamble. And in this preamble is a quote from a martyr, Israel will exist and will continue to exist until Islam will obliterate it, just as it obliterated others before it. That's how their covenant starts out. All right, Article 6, the Islamic Resistance Movement, Hamas, is a distinguished Palestinian movement whose allegiance is to Allah and whose way of life is Islam. It strives to raise the banner of Allah over every inch of Palestine, for under the wing of Islam, followers of all religions can coexist in security and safety where their lives, possessions, and rights are concerned. In the absence of Islam, strife will be rife, oppression spreads, evil prevails, and schisms and wars will break out. Sounds a little backwards to me, but anyway, that's their promise. Article 11, the Islamic Resistance Movement believes that the land of Palestine is an Islamic walk, which is a spiritually led area that's governed over by the spiritual leaders. Okay, so that's what a walk is. Consecrated for future Muslim generations until Judgment Day. It or any part of it should not be squandered. It or any part of it should not be given up. They're talking about the land of Palestine. Article 13, there is no solution for the Palestinian question except through jihad. Initiatives, proposals, and international conferences are all a waste of time and vain endeavors. 15, it is necessary to instill in the minds of the Muslim generations that the Palestinian problem is a religious problem and should be dealt with on this basis. 23, the Islamic Resistance Movement views other Islamic movements with respect and appreciation. Well, except for Fatah. So this is just full of stuff. First of all, they view them with respect. Well, I read one article where, and how they got out of this was, they deemed Fatah a secular organization that was made up of infidels and unbelievers. So that opened the door to kill them and not respect them. So that's what they did just this last week. If anybody thinks that this is not a religious war, look at it from Hamas's point. It is a Palestinian problem, and it is a religious problem, and should be dealt with on that basis. They see it as a religious problem. And how good are they going to do with diplomacy? Well, they just said there's no way to do it except through jihad. International conferences and proposals, initiatives are all a waste of time. So what are we doing even thinking about a diplomatic solution with these people? And especially, the Palestinian land should not ever be given up, and they're not going to rest until every square inch is in their hands. Does that allow for a two-state solution? Absolutely not. This is no different than the charter for the PLO. I'll show you some of theirs after, you know, probably next week. It's the same idea. They are not going to settle with a two-state solution. Israel, time and time again, has offered to do things for a two-state solution, the Palestinian Arabs and the Israeli Jews living in coexistence. But at the very heart of all of the things that are going on with the Islamic groups, they're saying there's no way it'll be a two-state solution. We're going to keep fighting until we own it all. We don't want the territories we've got. We want everything. So that was just something out of their covenant that I thought you would find interesting. Now then, also I wanted to show you this. Arabic and Hebrew are very common languages. There's a lot of the words that are almost similar whenever the Hebrews say shalom, peace. The Arabic word is salim, S-A-L-I-M. So there's a lot of common words that are they're almost identical. Well, Hamas in Arabic means zeal. So that's good. You're zealous for your cause. That's okay. But in Hebrew, here's the meaning of the words in Hebrew. The Hebrew verb is to treat violently. And the Hebrew noun, Hamas, is a disruption of the divinely established order. So can you kind of see where the friction starts to occur? Yeah, a whole lot. So that's kind of what's going on with these groups. I mean, with the world opinion thinking, gosh, if we can just talk long enough, if we can just set these folks down and everything, can't they work it out? Well, another example is what went on in Iraq this week with the Shiite shrine being blown up. That's hard to say three times fast, Shiite shrine. You get in trouble real fast, I think. And if it had happened on Saturday, it would have really been bad. Shiite shrine on Saturday. But the Sunnis blew up the Shiite mosque, and of course now they're at each other's throats. So here's the other question. The world needs to see that all the infighting that's going on, and they will live in hostility with all their brothers. The Sunnis and the Shiites going after each other have killed far more people than the invasion ever did whenever we went in. So the world needs to ask, why? Why is that? And to me, again, the only answer is biblically. So there's a few things that have gone on this week that just make it more fascinating to see what we're studying and how it's working out. Turn to Genesis 22. The next step that occurs is something that happens with Abraham and his son Isaac. Ishmael at this time is a pretty much grown boy. Isaac is probably 12, somewhere in there when this all occurs, so several years on down the road. And this testing comes that we've all seen and heard about. Genesis 22. It says, sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, Abraham, here I am, he replied. Then God said, take your son, your only son, Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about. So their word Moriah is going to be important later as a pinpoint focus of something else that we're going to talk about. So this is the first time that you hear the word Moriah. Okay, so kind of lock that in and remember it, we'll be back later. Also in these verses are one of the arguing points between the Jews and the Muslims. Because it says there, take your son, your only son. Okay, so one of the arguments from the Jews is, and from some Christian organizations is, that Ishmael was a bastard illegitimate son and doesn't count at all. Well, we already seen that Abraham and God both recognized Ishmael as a son and was blessed from God, received blessings from God. So we know that in that manner was legitimate. Well, what is used is, they'll go back to this verse and say, see right there it says, his son, his only son. That means Ishmael is of no concern. Well, that's not really true. what God is talking about here is your son that I promised. The only son that I promised. The one that I'm going to work my covenant through is who I'm working with and who I want you to take up to be sacrificed. And so that's why he's referring to Isaac as his son, his only son. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship and then we will come back to you." Sounds kind of faithful there, doesn't it? How many of us would have gone, "And I'll come back later"? That would be kind of bad. But he says, "And we will come back to you." I think the faith of Abraham started before he ever raised the knife. Okay? Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father, Abraham, "Father?" "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and the wood are here," Isaac said, "but where is the lamb for the burnt offering?" Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son," and the two of them went on together. Okay, now then, so what was Isaac's attitude, his knowledge at this point? What's that? He understood that something was missing. He didn't know what. He didn't know what they were doing. So Isaac was actually ignorant of what things were going on. And the reason I bring this up is whenever I read you the verses out of the Quran that have to do with Ishmael, it's vastly different. And so this is important to see the distinction between our Bible and the Quran and the teachings of the Muslims. Okay, but here's one of the points that I want you to remember is that Isaac was innocent in all of this. He did not know what was about to happen. He knew there was something amiss. When they reached the place God had told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Abraham looked up, and there in a thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called the place, "The Lord will provide." And to this day it is said, "On the mountain of the Lord it will be provided." The angel of the Lord called to Abraham from heaven a second time and said, "I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies, and through your offspring all nations on earth will be blessed because you have obeyed me." Okay, there's just huge stuff going on here. One thing that I didn't even hit on until just 2 weeks ago when I've read this, I don't know how many times, dozens of times, and just 2 weeks ago something hit me here that I'd never seen before. That just tells me who the real teacher is. The Holy Spirit going, "Oh, look at this. Look at this." One of the things that is fun to do if you ever have time or want to, do a study on the angel of the Lord. Because all the way through the Old Testament and New Testament, there are times when an angel of the Lord appears to do something for God. And it talks about an angel of the Lord. In the Old Testament, there's a person called the angel of the Lord who does not show up in the New Testament. Who is the angel of the Lord? Well, what's interesting right here is in verse 12 it says, "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said, and this is the angel of the Lord. He says, "Do not do anything to him now that I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me." Well, I'll be. And then up here in verse 15 it says, "The angel of the Lord called Abraham from heaven a second time and said, I swear by myself." What angel can do that? Only the angel of the Lord, it says, declares the Lord that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, I will surely bless you. Who does the blessings? God alone. I had never seen that before. The angel of the Lord. I swear by myself. Who is the angel of the Lord? God himself. See, this is another instance early on where the Jews have seen a nature of God that is expressed in more than one person. All the way from the first verses of Genesis, during the creation, shows the Spirit of God hovering over the waters, things like that. So all of a sudden the dual nature shows up early. And then in the Garden of Eden, where God says, we have made man in our image. He has become like one of us. The Jews have seen this personage of God being expressed in different ways. One God expressed in different ways. Now we have the angel of the Lord doing things throughout the Old Testament. And the angel of the Lord goes away by the time Christ comes. Well, that's interesting to think about. So here, that just hit me just a couple weeks ago. A lot of fun stuff. Okay, so he says, I'm going to bless your descendants. They're going to possess the cities of their enemies. And through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed through you. The Arab race and the Jewish race are the two longest living, continually living cultures in the world. Why is that? All I can say is because that's what God said right here. All the other cultures of the world have died off, have gone. They've lasted for a long time, but they are no longer. The Jews and the Arabs are the two longest continually living races in the world. Oh, I can only explain it by what God says. Okay, so turn to Genesis 25. Yes.
Good. Tribes did. Demand.
That's right. Good point. That God, at his very ultimate, does not desire human sacrifice. And that comes up several times in the Old Testament. He's saying, I don't desire your burnt offerings anymore. He said, that's not the point. I want your heart. I want the faith that Abraham exhibited. The faith that says, I am ready to slay my son for my God. That's the faith I want, not the sacrifice itself. And yet, in order to extend salvation to the world, God sacrificed his own son for us to be able to come into salvation. That's what's incredible. That God himself says, you know, all of that animal sacrifice, any other sacrifice, when it comes down to it, it doesn't do a thing. I want your heart. But to affect your entry into eternity, into my presence, I'm going to send my own son to do that for you. Because that's the only way it can happen. So, yep, good point. Great point. Okay, so Genesis 25 is a good turning point here in this argument also. Chapter 25, verse 1. Abraham took another wife whose name was Keturah. She bore him and these names, and one of them is Midian. And that'll come up later too. So, Midian, kind of remember that one. The sons of Midian were, in verse 4, so we have this one son through Keturah named Midian. Verse 5, it says, Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac, but while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east. Okay, so this is where it gets unusual. Ishmael, being the oldest, should have been the inheritor of all these things. But it says that he left everything he owned to Isaac. But while he was still living, he gave gifts to all the other sons of his concubines. That means all the other sons of anyone but Isaac from Sarah. So Keturah's sons, Hagar's son, all of those other sons, he gave gifts, and it says he sent them where? To the land of the east. Now then, in Jewish tradition and teaching, the land of the east is always meant to the east of the Jordan River. That's when they say to the east, that's where they're pointing to. That's where they mean. It's to the east of the Jordan River. And I'll show you something else that'll kind of back that up. Verse 7, it says, altogether Abraham lived 175 years, and Abraham breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man and full of years, and he was gathered to his people. His sons Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre in the field of Ephron, son of Zohar the Hittite, the field Abraham had brought from the Hittites. There Abraham was buried with his wife Sarah. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac. So it says just like that, that God is blessing his son through Isaac and all of his descendants. It says that at Abraham's death, Isaac and Ishmael were both there to bury him. Okay? So his two main sons, why didn't it talk about any of the other sons? Because those are the main sons that God blessed. Okay? And they showed up to bury Abraham. Now then it says, this is the account, verse 12, of Abraham's son Ishmael, whom Sarah's maidservant Hagar the Egyptian bore to Abraham. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael listed in the order of their birth. And it lists all the sons there. In verse 16 it says, these were the sons of Ishmael, and these are the names of the 12 tribal rulers according to their settlements and camps. Altogether, Ishmael lived 137 years. He breathed his last and died, and he was gathered to his people. His descendants settled in the area from Havilah to Shur, near the border of Egypt, as you go toward Ashur, and they lived in hostility toward all their brothers. Just like it said, as was the prophecy that God gave. Said that's how they lived. Well, now where is this area? Number one, this list of Ishmael's descendants. I haven't done it. I don't. If I had a few extra weeks with absolutely nothing to do, I'd try it. But I've read several scholars and commentaries that say that you can take these names here and trace the modern Arab nations throughout history from this list of names. So all the Arab nations that we see today can be traced back to these individuals. Like I say, I haven't done it, but I've read more than one place where people have done that. So I tend to believe that. Then it says where these people settled. The description of these lands where these people settle are basically starting in the Sinai Peninsula of Egypt, wrapping around through Jordan, Saudi Arabia, up to Assyria and Lebanon, all the way out the Saudi Arabian Peninsula to the coast, which is Yemen. Everything but the land we know as Israel. So when he sent his sons to the land of the east, east of the Jordan River, it really did mean they settled into what we know as the Arab countries of today. This is the description right there. So that's where these groups of people settled. So we see that kind of fall into place together. Ishmael, as promised, had the 12 tribes and settled in these areas east of the Jordan River. And he lived in hostility of all of his brothers, just like God said in chapter 16 of Genesis on his birth. So let's bring this all to kind of a pinpoint focus, because this is where it gets fun. As we look at the outflow of the descendancy of Isaac and Ishmael, this is the separating point between Judaism and Islam. So now what I want to do is show you a little bit of a flow here, a genealogy, and on this screen it's great. You can see it real well. But what I want to do is go back and review what we said before with the sons of Noah, Ham, Shem, and Japheth. Okay? The sons of Noah came out of all of these lines came these peoples. Now let's start with Ham. Ham begat some sons, one of which was Mizraim. And out of Mizraim came a group called the Kasluhites. And the Bible says, and out of the Kasluhites came the Philistines. Okay? So that line comes from Ham, Mizraim, to the Philistines. Another son of Ham was Canaan. Out of Canaan came a group called, as a whole, the Canaanites, which consisted of the Hittites, Jebusites, Amorites, and several other ites that we're going to talk about later that are going to come up again, okay? So through the line of Ham and Canaan came the Canaanites, all right? Now then, there's no historical nor biblical evidence of the existence of the Philistines or Canaanite peoples once the Greeks came into this area in 350 B.C., there are examples all the way through the Old Testament, especially as Solomon used some of the Jebusites and people as slaves. But by the time the Greeks came into this area in 350 B.C., there was no longer any evidence of Philistines or Canaanite groups. They had disappeared. And I'll tell you why that's important. All right, so let's take the line of Shem or the Shemites. When you hear anti-Semite, you automatically think of who? The Jews. Well, that's not quite right, because the Arabs and the Jews are both Semitic people. They come from the line of Shem. They are both Shemites. Okay? So the line of Shem starts out with this list of names here all the way down of his descendants to a man named Terah, who was the father of Abraham. And from Abraham, we know that Ishmael begat 12 sons who became the 12 tribes who descend into the Arab nations that we know today. Okay, so out of Ishmael comes the Arab nations. The Arabs and the Muslims all say we are descendants of Ishmael. They say that. That's well known in the Arab world. Isaac begat two sons named Jacob and Esau. Esau, his descendants were the Edomites, who died out before the end of the Old Testament time. And then the other son, Jacob, who became, and we'll get into this next week, became known as Israel, begat the 12 tribes of Israel, out of which the Jewish nation of Israel was born. Okay? So those are the two lines that are so important. Now then, here's my point bringing all of this up. In the Palestinian Liberation Organization Charter of 1968, one of the things that they talk about in here is claims of historical or religious ties of Jews with Palestine are incompatible with the facts of history and the true conception of what constitutes statehood. Judaism, being a religion, is not an independent nationality, nor do the Jews constitute a single nation with an identity of its own. They are citizens of the states to which they belong. So, well, number one is, in the charter that was written up to establish the sovereign nation of Palestine, this is the bedrock charter to get their nation going, which they never have done, they say that the historical evidence tying the Jews to this land doesn't exist. Well, now, remember, Islam did not come along until the 600s A.D., where we are right now with Abraham in the book of Genesis is 2000 B.C. What we're saying is Abraham and what God is promising to Abraham predates Islam by 2600 years. And so when Islam comes along and even today starts teaching that the Jews have no historical tie with this land, it's a lie. And to further elaborate on that and prove it, here's some of the teachings that go on today in grade schools, in high schools. In Syria, eighth graders are taught that it is known that the Jews of today do not have any connection with Palestine. The Palestinian school books say, the Palestinian, the books claim, have first rights to the country. The Arab Canaanites were here before the Jews. Therefore, the Zionistic claim of rights to the land by virtue of forefathers are a lie. Zionism is described as a movement of which the seizing of land is foremost among its tenets. Now, why would they say, try to claim being an Arab Canaanite? Why would they do that?
Put some of that area before the Jews.
Okay. We know, biblically, that the Canaanites were in this area before Abraham came in. So what they're saying is, if we can tie our descendancy to the Canaanites, we were there first, and therefore the land is ours. Okay? But what's wrong with claiming descendancy as an Arab Canaanite? It's the wrong line. If you claim descendancy from Ishmael as an Arab or a Muslim, you cannot claim descendancy through the line of Canaan. It is two different things. Let's go back to the chart. See how it works? You cannot claim descendancy from Ishmael and the 12 tribes in the Arab world, and the Muslims call Ishmael the father. Father Abraham and Ishmael were descended from Ishmael. You can't claim that and a Canaanite both. It doesn't work. Historically, all the evidence, the biblical evidence, it doesn't work. You cannot be a Canaanite and an Ishmaelite both. Yes?
Do the Islam people claim that in the Quran it gives the description of Ishmael's character?
No, it doesn't. She was saying, does the Quran describe Ishmael's character? Not in the words of the Bible. What's interesting is, and here's where the split occurs. In the Quran, I'll read this probably next week. In the Quran, it says that Ishmael was the son that was taken to be sacrificed. And Ishmael, since he was the one that was taken to be sacrificed, should be the son of the promise, and therefore the land belongs to the Muslims. So we know biblically it was Isaac that was taken up, that God's promise and covenant flows through Isaac and the Jewish people, and the land belongs to them. That's where the split begins, right there. And I'll read you some of the verbiage out of the Quran next week. Yes?
In that PLO charter, what yes.
I know. Zionism is something that the Arab nations really key on. And what they're trying to do is kind of separate that from the Jewishness, the religious aspect of it, and say Zionism is a teaching that just talks about the grabbing of land. And so they can kind of align themselves against the Zionists better than they can with outright saying it's the Muslims against the Jews. Describes
Jews word for Jerusalem used in the Old
Testament. That's right. It doesn't make sense. Zion has always been seen as Jerusalem, and the Jews are always called, you know, we marching upward to Zion, and it is an important name for Jerusalem, an area even in Jerusalem. What they try to do, the Muslims try to do, the Arabs try to do, is to say they are Zionist, rather than saying, you know, it's not real politically correct to say, well, it's the Muslims against the Jews, although there's a whole lot of teaching about that, and I'll show you some. So it's not really good to say in public it's really Muslims against the Jews, although the Hamas charter says it really is a religious war. So they'll call them Zionists, meaning, you know, these are Israeli land grabbers, and they've occupied our country, so that if they kind of keep it at a more political level, they can keep it going a little hotter. But you're right, it's a term that just doesn't work. Okay, so we've seen these two lines. You can't claim to be an Arab and a Canaanite, it just doesn't work. Things like that. Now then, so what does the Quran itself say about this land? Well, these are actual verses out of the Quran. Chapter 5, 20 and 21. Bear in mind the words of Moses to his people. He said, "Remember, my people, the favors which Allah has bestowed upon you. He has raised up prophets among you, made you kings, and given you that which he has given to no other nation. Enter, my people, the holy land which Allah has assigned for you. Do not turn back and thus lose all." That says it in the Quran. God gave them some land. And he tells the Israelites, enter this holy land I've given you. Chapter 10, verse 93. We settled the Israelites in a secure land and provided them with good things. Well, which land are they talking about? This is Muhammad writing in about 620 A.D. Like I say, 2,600 years after what we're seeing in Genesis. The Quran says, well, that Allah settled the Israelites in some secure land. 17:104, and thereafter we said to the children of Israel, dwell in the land. When the promise of the everlasting life comes, we shall bring you all together. Well, that sounds like you dwell in the land, and coming up on judgment day, we're going to gather you back. Doesn't it? This is out of the Quran. So again, there's a lot of contradiction between verses in the Quran and what the Quran says and what Islam teaches to the people. They teach that this land belongs to them because we've been there longer. They teach that Israel has occupied this land unjustly and stolen it from them. God says, I'm going to give you the land here, and it's going to be the land of the Canaanites. So there again, it's like, you know, there was somebody there before Abraham and his descendants. But when God says, I'm going to give it to you, I'll take it. I believe it. So even the claim that they were there first doesn't flow with the biblical description. Yes, sir?
So are they claiming that they came out of Egypt as descendants of Ishmael and Moses and Isaac and descendant?
Of Isaac.
Of Isaac?
Yeah. And I'll who? I'm sorry.
The Muslims are claiming that Moses is a descendant of Ishmael?
No, because they're talking about the Israelites here. They know the line, and they talk about the Israelites in the Quran being in Egypt under the Pharaoh and running from the Pharaoh and the Pharaoh chasing them. The story of Moses leading the Israelites out of Egypt has a lot of similarities, but a lot of things that aren't the same as the biblical story. But they talk about the Israelites being led to this promised land right here. So it's the Israelites they're talking about through Moses. So, yep. So there's a lot of stories about this and talking about the Israelites and those descendants. And they say, and you're going into this land that God, Allah, has given you. So that's the words of the Quran. So there's a lot of contradictions going on. Okay, so I think that that's where we're going to stop here, because next week we're going to have to get in, since this split has started to occur, now that we're Isaac and Ishmael and what happens from these descendants, I'm going to need to get into just a little bit of Islamic terminology so we can better understand how this departs from each other and what the meaning of it is. And so I want to hold off until next week getting into the Islamic terminology. But I'll show you some more verses out of the Quran that completely contradict their own teachings and their Bible that we see that just don't add up again. And we'll continue through the biblical history. And as we piece this together, then all of a sudden you see things that go on in the Gaza Strip today, and you're going, well, that's why it's happening. Any questions or comments? Yes?
On the previous screen, on verse 10, when it says we, who is we?
We. That's another interesting oddity about the Quran. The Muslims teach that Christians are polytheists. We believe in more than one God, the Father, Son, the Holy Ghost. That's not true. We believe in one God represented in three persons. And so they are strict monotheists. Yet every time that Allah speaks in the Quran, it is as we or us. And the first time I started reading that, I'm going, now wait a minute. They're saying we and us. So I finally found a reasoning behind that from the Islamic spiritual leaders. They say that that is only as a sign of respect and reverence, not of a duality of nature of Allah. Okay. Yeah, but you're right. Allah always speaks as we and us. Go figure. Doesn't hold up to me. Exactly. But they just say, well, that's a sign of respect, which I don't understand that either. So, again, it goes back to, there's quite a few contradictions that just don't quite even out. Anything else? Appreciate you being here. Let's have a word of prayer. God, we thank you so much that you have given us your word, and that historically we can read your word and see what's happening today and know that you are in full control, have seen all things from beginning to end. We thank you for these exciting times that we live in, to see that we have prophecy being fulfilled in front of us, God, and know that you're at work in our world. God, we ask that all people have that opportunity to come to know your Son and his saving grace. All people, God. The people that we come in contact with, God, give us the opportunity to tell them the good news of Jesus Christ. We thank you for your Son who makes it all possible. In his name we pray. Amen. Thank you for being here.